We'll, of course, continue to follow the fallout from yesterday's firing of FBI Director James Comey. What a story. A surprise firing, Russian interference in an election, a real estate magnate president. You could not make this up. Oh, wait. Our next guest could. He's author Dennis Lehane, who's written gritty novels like Mystic River and World Gone By. But while reading the first 100 or so pages of his great new novel, I wondered, has Dennis Lehane gone all Oprah on us? His books have hardened male protagonists. This one centers around a young woman struggling with identity and panic attacks. Rachel is a successful investigative reporter running from memories of her mother, who wrote a famous book about successful marriages but was a miserable creature in her own life. Rachel has an on-air meltdown, becomes agoraphobic, barely leaving the house she shares with her so understanding husband Brian. Oh, isn't he just too good to be true? Cue the screeching psycho music. Here's where the novel shifts gears. Rachel is forced to not only leave that house, but carry a gun, maybe use it to kill someone. We are not in Oprah territory anymore. Dennis Lehane's new novel is Since We Fell. He joins us from the NPR studios in Culver City. Dennis, nice to speak to you as always.
Yeah, good to talk to you.
So I mentioned the screeching music from Psycho. You've said this novel is your chance to do a Hitchcock. What do you mean?
Well, Hitchcock oftentimes had normal people with somewhat abnormal maladies put into then very dangerous situations. So that was what I wanted to do with Rachel. I thought, what would be the great question if you were so agoraphobic you couldn't walk out your door? Yeah. Well, I don't know about anybody else, but for me it would be, is it possible that there's a lot more going on outside than I think?
Right. Is it possible that, in fact, if I stay inside, something terrible is going to happen to me because there seem to be people after me and I don't know who they are? How about getting into the head of a woman and a woman's relationship with her mother? I mean, where'd that come from?
I don't know. I find the I do think that a damaged relationship between the same gender parent can be very fascinating. So you find like a lot of men who had bad relationships with their father who tend to be profoundly damaged by that. Mm-hmm. Women who tend to have very good relationships with their mothers tend to be very healthy in my experience. Then there's just tends to be the opposite, and that's poor Rachel.
And so, yes, maybe gathering from things you'd heard from women about their relationships with their mothers, but you've also said that this whole first part of the novel, which really is, it's just different for you, you know, so you, mm-hmm. you feel it right away, was sort of a happy accident.
Yeah, I had laid down the plot in a first draft, and then I said, well, that's perfectly adequate, but it's not why I read, and it's really not why I write. And so then I said, what's missing here? And I thought, we could really drill down on this human being and investigate who she is before the action begins. And then I came in with what I hoped was a very compelling search story, which is this woman who grows up with her paternity being withheld from her by her mother. And I thought, okay, so this is a woman who goes on a journey to figure out not only who her father is, but why her mother would not tell her who her father is. Mm. And that becomes the driving engine of the first 100 pages.
And as we said, that, you know, that's a story that could be discussed on the old Oprah show on the couch there. But then suddenly, there we are, just whiplashed. I'm wondering, too, your books are usually Boston-centric. This one is, and so are you. But now, much has been made of the fact that you're living on the West Coast. You're working with David Kelly, the great producer of Ally McBeal and every show that started with Boston, Boston Legal, but on a 10-episode adaptation of Stephen King's Mr. Mercedes. You've had your books go to films, Mystic River, Clint Eastwood, Shutter Island by Martin Scorsese, and now you're living on the West Coast. I was wondering if, you know, you've thrown Rachel into this world where she's looking around and she doesn't trust anyone now. Her husband is not who he says he was, all of their friends. I'm just wondering if a part of that comes from living in Los Angeles.
I don't think so.
And with no offense to people in Los Angeles. But in the film industry, there are a lot of people, you know, who put a front on.
Oh, God, yeah. But I'm so used to that by this point. I would say that if there's any sort of metaphor I was working, it would be by leaving Boston, I left a lot of foundational things at a time in my life where I would not have thought I was at a reinvention point. So that was certainly something to kind of get my head around, I think, for the last couple of years. It's like, whoa, how did I end up here?
And that's sort of how Rachel feels. Oh, how did I end up in a marriage with somebody who isn't at all who he said he was? And in fact, we don't want to give too much away, but At a certain point, people fake their deaths. It turns out that a lot of what's going on is that there are people involved who might have been actors. So part of it is even putting on a show. How much of that came from L.A.? I'm wondering, did you learn about squibs, you know, the things you can put in your cheek and bite on it and then suddenly blood comes out?
No, no. All of this was channeling my brother when my brother went to Trinity Rep, the theater school in Providence.
Yeah.
I spent a lot of time on Federal Hill, Atwells Avenue. All the locations, the Providence locations that show up in the book. The book is actually dedicated to his roommate, who was the first writer I knew. And it was hanging out with that guy in Providence while they were all doing their thing. And me and my buddy would just go down there, the shot of, you know, maybe dating an actress. we're like 18, 19, knuckleheads. And I remember sitting out with this guy, Dave.
David Wickham.
And David Wickham. And he was a playwright. And we started talking, and I thought, wait a second, if he can do this, well, maybe I can do this.
Hmm.
And that was I remember very much the moment I made this decision. I was sitting right across from Raymond Patriarca's place.
Raymond Patriarca is the mobster from Providence.
Yeah, and he had a cigarette vending machine place, and it was right across from my brother's apartment. And so I was sitting out there with this guy, Dave, and I thought, huh, if he's a writer, I can be a writer. And that was the moment I made the decision to become a writer.
Huh. Well, and you are also watching your brother, you know, make believe he could be somebody else. And there's a lot of that in this book, too. The craft of acting kind of intersects with the good old-fashioned craft of killing. You know, all hell breaks loose at a certain point. I mean, faces are being blown off. And
blood is spilled.
Blood is spilled. Yes. And you have a woman at the center of it.
Yes.
Why'd you do that? What was happening there?
I have no idea. I think I was just sick of writing about dudes. The last three books in my, you know, my Coughlin family trilogy, you know, that's 1,300 pages I spent in a very male-centric world. My decisions tend to be very organic. And so it's not like I sat down one day and I said, I want to do a female protagonist. I just had this thought in my head. What if an agoraphobic woman saw her husband where he wasn't supposed to be? And that's really when I was off to the races.
Yeah.
So it never occurred to me not to write it from a female point of view.
But did it ever occur to you to maybe try to stay with the first half of the book? I mean, it's intense when suddenly she looks up and, as you said, wow, that looks like her husband, but he's supposed to be overseas, you know, and it all starts to unravel. You could have continued to have a great novel there. Did you ever think maybe I could try to do this without the guns and the violence?
No. I mean, at the end of the day, it's, I don't know, at the end of the day, that's where it's going to go.
Why is that? What's the attraction for you?
I don't know. I wish I could tell you. I just don't know that I'm that type of, you know, sooner or later, I want to engage in what Cormac McCarthy calls fiction of mortal event. I want the stakes to be, you know, literally life and death. And that's how Rachel ultimately figures out who she is.
Yeah.
Without being thrown into this pressure cooker, she wouldn't. Without a clock being on her, she wouldn't. So, yeah. So, I mean, the book becomes, I think the book's a hybrid. It's almost like it's three books rolled into one.
Well, and Dennis Lehane's many fans probably would have it no other way, all hell breaking loose at the end. And very cinematic. You're living in L.A. now, and you're seeing your books go to film more and more. Are you thinking cinematically as you're doing this? Like, wow, that'd be great to be out on the boat, and then suddenly maybe somebody's dying. Nope.
No,
you're not thinking cinematically?
No, I feel like writers writing cinematically predates cinema by about 500 years. So it's not a chicken or the egg question. We came first. And so when people say you're writing cinematically, I think it just means you're writing vividly. And I don't think of set pieces in terms of, oh, wow, that'll look really great. Where will I put the camera? You know, that's not my thing. Writing a book is just a much more intimate experience. If I want to write for film, I write a script.
Yeah. Dennis Lehane, his new book is Since We Fell. Dennis, thanks as always.
Thanks, Robin. Great to talk to you.
You made me leave my happy home.
Yes, the book title, Since We Fell, a nod to this song, Since I Fell For You, Lenny Welsh, plays an important role. And Dennis didn't write it that way, but I smell movie. It's here and now.
Since I fell for you.